Good morning and good coffee, everybody. Hey, it's time for some morning coffee with Larry, and I'm glad that you are here joining with me today for a nice hot cup of the good stuff. So good this morning. Well, today is Monday, the 25th of September. It's hard to believe September is basically over. We got what? September has 30 days, so we're right close to the end. And for those of you, like I used to be, who work in the federal system, we are coming up on the end of the year. The new federal year starts on October 1st, and we'll see if those folks in Washington can figure out the budget for some of the different departments, or if we wind up having, you know, a partial government shutdown, which really typically isn't much of a shutdown. It's an inconvenience for the employees and for the different departments where that happens. I went through a government shutdown that involved the VA, a short shutdown. It was several years ago, and kind of learned some of that stuff firsthand. But yep, October 1st is the new federal year. I don't know why that's important other than the year of 2023 is moving quickly. Well, today, well, I guess as far as the conflict in Washington over the budget, it does kind of fit in with the topic today because we're continuing with The Triumphant Marriage by Neil Clark Warren, and we are set to do Secret Number 7, which is all about conflict and how you manage it. Pardon me, big morning yawn. It is, what is it? Not quite 5:30 in the morning. But how you manage conflict, and that's what the chapter title is. Work it through. Conflict is inevitable, so learn to handle it productively. You know, that's very true. There is conflict in all relationships. Now, conflict isn't necessarily bad. It just means that there is a decision or a choice that needs to be made regarding some sort of an issue. You know, that's just normal. You're driving through town and you come to a T. And now you have a choice because you can't continue on the path that you were on because there's no road going there. You've come to a T. Do you turn left or do you turn right? Well, if it's obvious that, you know, one goes in the direction that you're wanting to go and the other goes in an absolutely opposite direction, the choice seems simple. You know, it's a no-brainer. But if both paths lead in a similar way to the destination, well, you've got a conflict and you have to make a decision. And there are those circumstances in every relationship. And there's all different kinds of factors that come into play that makes dealing with some sort of conflict, some sort of a need for a decision, you know, vital. There's a lot of things that take place. The problem is, and part of this is due to complexity. Another part is based upon learned experience of personally of how to handle conflict. Another part of it is how you saw your parents handle conflict, how you and your siblings handled conflict. That leads to what's going to happen in a marital relationship. And just as a little bit of interesting information here, that Neil Clark Warren mentions. I want to see if I can find it here handy. Okay. We know the divorce rate is very high in our country. And I haven't seen any studies lately because it may be skewed a little bit because one of the things I've noticed over the past 15 years or so is that fewer and fewer younger people are getting married. And whenever I've talked to younger people about that, and some of those younger people aren't that younger anymore, that they saw the effects of a bad marriage on their own personal childhood, and they've abandoned the idea of marriage. And so, you know, that's, you know, that I think can skew it some, but a study back at the time of the writing of this found that 50% of divorces take place within the first 2 years of marriage. And that's kind of crazy when you think about it. And what would be the cause? Well, it's not because they're just all lovey-dovey and everything is great. It's they don't have the skills, the abilities, the determination to work through conflict. And so they just throw the marriage out. Now, another factor can be is if you've got kids that are now adults that are getting married and they saw, you know, their parents go through divorce and maybe multiple divorces, then they may not have the value of marriage. And it's like, okay, we got married and marriage isn't permanent. Marriage is a temporary thing. And they have that belief going into it, which when it comes to conflict, if we just throw in the towel regarding conflict, that's not a good thing. But are there good and healthy ways for dealing with conflict? Because there's always going to be conflict. And again, like I said a little bit ago, conflict is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just the reality. It's how we deal with it that it can be a good thing or a bad thing. You know, one of the things that, or a thing that Neil Clark Warren points out in this chapter are different conflict styles, different styles of how people argue. And let me just touch base on those. He calls the first style cats and dogs. And, you know, oh, well, you know, they've got a marriage, then boy, do they fight like cats and dogs. Yeah, cats and dogs, when you think about that, it's harsh. It's short, and usually somebody comes away licking their paws kind of thing. Either, you know, maybe it's turned into a physical altercation or it's been a verbally abusive altercation. But people come away wounded to some degree from cats and dogs fighting. Because, you know, what do cats have that they fight with? They typically fight with their claws. What do dogs typically fight with? They fight with their teeth, and there's lots of hissing and barking. Now, the other conflict style he calls rational and orderly. This is where they sit down, and their goal is to find a mutually, you know, satisfying solution. Their goal is to work through it together in order to come up with something. They do it rationally. They keep more of their emotions out of it, and they do it in kind of an orderly manner that makes sense. The third style is bury it and forget it. And this isn't conflict resolution. This is conflict avoidance. And I guess a way of thinking about it is like one of those little bitty firecrackers. You know, as a kid, I grew up, my favorite firecracker brand was Black Cat. It was perfect for the kids growing up in the 60s and 70s. And but there was another type of firecracker that was smaller. And it was called a lady's finger firecracker. And a pack of those, you had twice as many bangs compared to a regular pack. Well, I never tried it because I'm smarter than that, but I had friends who would hold a ladyfinger firecracker in their fingers and let it go pop. It didn't do the damage like a regular firecracker would. And that's kind of like, okay, I'm going to take one of these little firecrackers. And whenever you use avoidance, you bury it and forget it, it's like you take one of those little firecrackers and you put it in your finger. And then the next time there's a thing that you bury it and forget it, you put a second one there, then a third one there, then a fourth one there, then a fifth one there, and a sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, 20th, 30th, 40th. You get the picture? You get all this crap that's buried in trying to forget it, but forgetting it simply means you're not talking about it. You're not trying to find a resolution to it. And you got enough firecrackers that next thing you know, whenever it finally gets a spark and it lights, you're now holding on to a whole pack of them. And guess what? There's going to be a lot of damage when something like that happens. And I could give you more examples, but those are, some of the styles of how people fight, how people face conflict that's not really all that good. Whenever I was working with couples in counseling, I would describe it this way, that there are discussions, arguments, and fights. Discussions, arguments, and fights. So what's a discussion? In each of these cases, there's a conflict. There is a decision that has to be made. And so in a discussion, both people come to the table. And just picture them. You're coming to the kitchen table. You're sitting down and you start by describing what the problem is. And I always say you do a 360-degree description. So you take turns describing the problem from each person's point of view. One person describes, then the other person. Then they go back and forth because you want to see the object all the way around. It's kind of what I would do in session is I'd hold up my clipboard and I would, have the back of the clipboard facing the couple. And I said, describe in detail what you see. And so they would describe the back of the clipboard and I would have a puzzled look on my face of concern. I'd say, that isn't what I see. I see a rectangle with a metal clip on the top of it, and it's holding paper that has writing on it. Why don't you see what I see? Well, they're looking at the back of the clipboard. I'm looking at the front. And the only way that, unless I turn the clipboard around, is for me to describe what I see and for them to describe what they see. And so that's the first part of a discussion. You lay everything out on the table. And then I have them, okay, now, what are different possible things that can be a solution to this? There's usually not a silver magic bullet that will resolve the whole problem. So I say, let's start going back and forth with an idea or a solution to this, different possible things. And so I would say it's kind of like if you've got a deck of cards, you shuffle them up, and you put, 20 of them out on the table, and one at a time, you turn them face up. You reveal what the card is. So one person reveals a card, which is one of their ideas for a solution to this. Then the other person does the same thing, and they go back and forth until they have all the cards on the table, turned up. Then the next part is, let's put the cards together to get the best poker hand. Now, the best hand in poker is a royal flush, and I think it's in spades. Well, you could get a royal flush every time if you had every card in the deck up on the table, but that's not the case. I only gave you a certain number, because no one has every option available to them. We all have different limits when it comes to finding solutions. And so, what's the best hand the two of you can make from the cards turned up? Or in other words, of all the possible solutions, what's the most, which combination of these makes the most solution for, makes the most sense as a solution for our problem? And you put those things together, and now that's a solution you're going to work with. Maybe it'll work great. Maybe it'll work somewhat. Maybe you have to come back and revisit it because it didn't work well enough. But that's what a discussion is. There's no fighting. There's no name calling. There's no manipulation. It's the goal is to find a solution in that kind of rational and orderly way. Now, an argument, or what I typically call a persuasive argument, is either when one or both parties have thought about this enough that they have an idea of a solution in their head. But out of respect for the other spouse, we need to go through a similar process. And so it starts off like a discussion. Okay, let's identify the problem 360 degrees, taking turns going back and forth. Okay, now once we all understand the problem, then one party or both says, hey, I think I've got a solution to this. Okay, so then the person who has the solution, or what they believe is a solution, a decision, they describe their solution. They're basically picking the cards that they think and turning them up that they think would work best. Then the other person has the chance to offer their solution or their ideas. And it has to have respect with it. The person who's already had came up with the solution first and they described it, they have to be willing to allow themselves to be persuaded by the other person. Because if it's like, well, I've got a solution and you can tell me yours, but I know this is the one that's right, then that's not really a persuasive argument. That's going to turn more into some form of a manipulation. So you still have to have respect for each other. And then you may work through and say, hey, you've got some better points than what I was thinking of because I hadn't done a 360-degree look at it. And you come up with, you know, your decision there. But again, with a persuasive argument, one person has thought about it and has come up with a solution, or maybe both people have. And they have their separate solutions that you have to work through. One of the things that happens a lot of times, and this is often the case whenever it's you're using persuasive argument, is at least one person has thought about this longer than the other person has. They may have been aware of it for quite a while, and the other person hasn't really been aware of it for a while, or maybe they just became aware of it in the meeting. You know, one person's thought about this for 6 months. The other person didn't know it was a problem because there was a problem with communication somewhere along the line. And so there needs to sometimes have this issue, if it's not a crisis, tabled so the other person has a chance to think about it. If I've had 6 months to prep and you just found out about it 5 minutes ago, it may not be the right time to make a decision. We may need to let the other person kind of absorb, chew on it, think about it. Does that make sense? Okay. The third way is a fight. And there's one thing missing in a fight that is present in both of the others. Present in the discussion, present in the persuasive argument, and that is respect. In the first two ways, respect is vitally important. In a fight, respect has left the building, just like Elvis. Respect has left the building, and it's not present. So the gloves come off, the rules are thrown out. And it usually starts with dart throwing. Now, imagine if somebody throws a dart in the old-fashioned pointy kind, not the fun plastic ones now, but the real darts, and somebody throws a dart at the other person and it hits them. And they like, wow, that hurts. Why'd you throw a dart at me? If you knew how much this hurt, you wouldn't be throwing darts at me. So they pull out the dart and throw it in the other person's chest. And they go, ow, I can't believe it. They threw a dart at me. Well, I'm going to throw it back at them. And boom, 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 boom. That's kind of the way a fight is. A fight uses not respect, not the goal of a mutually acceptable decision. The primary goal of a fight is to hurt the other person enough that they just give in. Maybe it's name calling. Maybe it's some sort of physical altercation. Maybe it's dragging up all kinds of stuff from the past. Oh, you think you can talk on this topic? Well, what about this? You did this long ago. You know, and blah, blah, blah. You know, there isn't any discussion of the problem. It's just hurting the other person in some way, shape, or form. And we see these in television shows. We see these in movies. And in a lot of those shows, well, the wife and I, we were watching an old movie from 86 yesterday, The Money Pit. And because of all the stress of this house that is just falling apart and everything that could go wrong does go wrong, the couple's under tremendous pressure. And they're associating their spouse with the pressure of the house issues. So tensions that should be focused on the house and the problems there get focused also on the couple. And they had this big, nasty fight scene. And it looks like they're not going to make it. But of course, it's a movie. And a matter of, you know, 10 minutes later in the movie, they make up and everything is hunky-dory. That's usually not quite what happens in real life. There's a lot of damage from fights, and some fights are really loud, some fights are really quiet, but the respect has left the building. So what I recommend is, you know, learn and practice the skills of a discussion, and try to work in that particular direction. Now, my time is running short, but Neil has in his chapter 8 Secrets of Conflict Resolution. I'll quick run through those, and then I'll toss out a few things that I try to have couples do to, you know, avoid. What are some tips to avoid a fight? But his 8 Secrets of Conflict Resolution. Recognize the marriage as a we business. I would have couples sitting on a couch in my office. I would have them actually, I would hand them the eraser from my whiteboard. And I'd say, now hold this between the two of you. And they would. I'd say, now this is the problem. The eraser is the problem. And when it's held between the two of you, now when you look at the problem, you see your spouse and you associate your spouse with the problem. Now, give me back the eraser, and I'd set it on, you know, I'd hold it away from them. And I'd say, now, sit there on the couch, hold hands, and look at the eraser that I'm holding over here. Now, when you look at the problem, do you see your spouse? No. You're holding hands with your spouse to face this problem that may be associated with one or the other of you, but the problem's over here. This is the problem, not your spouse. Number two is the process the data, the day there, as quickly as possible. If there's a conflict, don't wait for 6 months to bring it up to your spouse. If there's a problem, just to work on it in a logical, healthy, respectful manner right away. Then you don't, it's kind of like if you're driving and you make a wrong turn, let each other know right away. So you can pull in a driveway and turn around. Don't do like the movie Dumb and Dumber, where one of them gets on the wrong road and they're now 3 hours the wrong direction on the highway. You know, don't keep going farther and farther till you finally deal with it. Three, stick to the subject. Yeah, what's the issue? Don't get sidetracked by other crap along the way. Keep it focused. Number four, don't intimidate. Intimidation is just a way of bullying. And some bullying, you know, is very subtle. It's not necessarily like, you know, a schoolyard fight between a bully and his victim, but it's, you know, it can be very quiet, you know, manipulation. Don't intimidate. Don't manipulate. Number six, turn up your listening sensitivity. What often happens is when there is an emotionally challenging issue that has to be resolved, we'll listen to what our spouse says, but just the first part of the sentence, maybe the first three or four words. And then as they're saying, all of a sudden something happens, you know, kind of triggers in your mind, and you start thinking of what your comeback line is going to be. So you miss the whole rest of the sentence. So what you need to do is slow it down and turn up your listening sensitivity. Maybe do a little thing called active listening, where when the other person says their sentence or more than one sentence in describing it, then you reflect back to them. Oh, well, it sounds like what the way you're seeing it is this, this, and this. And that then they can confirm, yes, that's what I meant to say, or no, that's not really what I meant to say. Let me try that again. See, the goal is not to come up with comebacks. The goal is mutual understanding, communication. Practice give and take. Practice going back and forth where you're utilizing each other's perceptions and perspective in order to better deal with this situation. You know, if you've got a big problem that you're trying to figure out and face, and you know, you need to call in experts, well, shouldn't you listen to the experts? Shouldn't you, you know, do some give and take? Well, when it comes to a problem that's involving your marriage, you two are the experts of it. So what are things that you can do to go back and forth, give and take, to find the solution? And then the eighth thing he has is celebrate every victory. Doesn't mean you go to Disney World each time, but celebrate those victories. You know, say, hey, we came up with it. Identify that you've got the solution. Hey, we came up with a solution. It's worked. We resolved this. I bet you we can do it again on something else. See, whenever I've got couples that I work with, I would talk about rules for a fair fight. Kind of along these things. I'd say, sit down at the kitchen table. Pick a time to do this when there's minimal distractions, not where somebody's watching TV and reading the newspaper or cooking dinner, or there's kids in and out and around where you're at. Pick a time where it's just the two of you, sit down like at the kitchen table or someplace where you're at the same eye level, not one person standing and the other sitting where there's natural intimidation. Pass the pencil. This is a technique where if you're going to discuss something, have a pencil. And you, in order to talk, you have to be holding the pencil. Doesn't mean you wrestle over it, but you hold the pencil for like 30 seconds to describe or talk about something. Then you have to pass it to the other. And that helps you have a give and take. Talk softly. If you have a tendency to yell or talk loudly because you're getting upset or you're trying to intimidate, then talk softly. When you talk in a whisper, the other person's going to have to listen harder and pay more attention. That's a good thing. Take breaks. If it's turning into a long discussion, take some breaks. Don't let yourself get overwhelmed with the length of it. And don't be afraid to table the topic to another day. This isn't postponing, but this is just simply saying, we've worked on this for a while. Let's table it. Let's come back to it tomorrow at 6 p.m. Set a date, set a time when you're going to come back to it. So anyway, we are out of time, but conflict is going to be there. Practice the skills that let you resolve it. All right. Have a great one, everybody. Take care. God bless.